Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the NFC North preview edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I'm Pod Vader, your humble host, presenting another division preview. It's June. It's division preview month. We've been bringing you all of the divisions so far, and if you've missed any, we hope you've been subscribing to iTunes or TuneIn or Stitcher or anywhere you can subscribe to this wonderful podcast so you don't miss any of the divisions that we've been doing. Here with the NFC North, we will present you with our superfans, our Chicago superfan Tom, our Green Bay superfan Brian, our Viking superfan Joe, our newest superfan, and we still have an opening for the Detroit Lions. If you want to submit and become the Detroit Lions superfan, all you need to do is send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can, of course, tweet us at NFU Podcast or get in touch with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. So what did we do? Well, I brought in a special guest who will join us at the end of the preview, Chris Lemieux of the Pride of Detroit podcast and the editor of Pride of Detroit blog on SB Nation. He's going to preview the Detroit Lions for us. That's going to be coming up at about the hour mark or so of this particular podcast. So if you're just here to listen to Chris talk about the Lions, feel free to fast forward about an hour and you'll get to the Chris portion of the NFC North preview. But if you're here for the entire division, and honestly, why wouldn't you be here for the entire division? Please sit back and enjoy the NFC North. Let's bring in the super fans of the NFC North, and we'll start in winning order. And so the winner of the division last year was the Green Bay Packers, and that is our super fan, Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Pod. Great to be here.
Then we will skip the Detroit Lions, because as we mentioned, we don't have a Lions super fan, so send that email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Next up on the board were the Minnesota Vikings, and we do have a new super fan. It's my pleasure to introduce you all to Joe. Hi, Joe.
How you doing? Welcome, and thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. We're happy to have someone here to represent the Minnesota Vikings. So we'll get into your season preview in just a moment. Last but not least, perhaps I believe he has the most seniority amongst the group, or it might be tied with Brian. I'm not 100% sure. Here is Chicago Tom. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
It is going well. Have you been on the show longer than Brian has? I don't know.
It's been about 4 years. I don't really know. I think Brian's been a super fan as long as I've been here.
Yeah, I did, and back to the Four Letter Network days.
Yeah.
But
All right.
Joe shows good signs of being a good fan. It must be about 2 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast right now or something. That's a trooper.
Yeah,
It's not quite that early, but it is early, and we appreciate Joe for joining us. And let's jump right into the division preview here now, and we will start with the Green Bay Packers. You know, last season, Brian, I had seen the easiest schedule in the NFL belonging to Green Bay, thought they were going to sort of tear up the NFL. That's not exactly the way it happened, though.
No, it was a very frustrating year to watch. I thought we were going to go 14-2. Maybe we could go 15-1. But then a rash of injuries struck and kind of knocked us from our perch. So it was difficult to watch. The secondary really struggled. The defense in general really struggled. And the offense, you kind of saw some flashbacks from years prior where we could not, our receivers could not get open again. But at the end of the year, we were able to run the table, as it were, and kind of reclaim our perch atop the NFC North.
So what were the key moves that improved your team for this season?
I don't feel like I have a good answer to that. You know, when you're a draft and develop team, you kind of need to retain talent. And I feel like this year we had many more subtractions than we had additions. So I'll cover the additions first. We brought in Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks to help shore up the tight end position. I do think that'll probably be an improvement over one of our subtractions, which was Jared Cook. I think just those two guys combined are better than he is, obviously. And I think, in particular, Martellus is going to be a much better blocking tight end than Jared Cook was. So I think, you know, maybe we see a little bit of a boost at that position. We brought in Jari Evans, kind of a veteran replacement for our superstar guard TJ Lang. So kind of a downgrade at that position. And I think the only other guy we brought in this season was kind of a defensive line depth type in Ricky Jean Francois. But he's going to have to fill in for a Julius Peppers departure, a Dayton Jones departure. We also lost some depth on our offensive line, a really good kind of backup center swing tackle in J.C. Treader. We lost Micah Hyde, who was a role player for us on defense and a really good punt returner. We also lost Eddie Lacy. So I feel like the depletion that we saw in terms of talent leaving was not really replaced. You know, we did spend some draft capital to pick up some additional talent, but I'm not sure you can really count a whole lot on those players in year one. So I'm expecting maybe a small step backward for the Packers this year. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
So talk about some of those other additions and specifically your draft picks. You did go with your first four picks. That's what I was trying to say there. All defense.
Yeah. And obviously the defense is where we need the most attention. I think the offense is pretty much in good shape as long as number 12 is healthy. I really love the Kevin King pick. I think, you know, we struggled mightily in the secondary last year, primarily due to injury. I think also there's a case to be made that it was because of talent as well. And I just like what he brings to the table. I think he's clearly a guy you can put on the outside. He's got speed. He's got height. So he can kind of defend some of those over-the-top balls that burned us so badly last year. And I think one of the reasons I like him is because it's going to allow us to move Demaryius Randall into his more natural slot position. And I think we'll actually get better at two positions there as a result of drafting Kevin King. We also picked up Josh Jones, a safety, but I think we're actually going to play him at kind of that nickel linebacker role, which I'm very excited to see. You know, that's a position where we have kind of been in the old mold where you got those big thumpers inside, big slow guys. And I feel like the NFL has really moved away from that. So I think we are going to catch up with the times a little bit this season. It'll be interesting to see how quickly he can adapt to that. But I'm excited to see him. He's ran a 4.4, and I think he's 6'2 and about 225. So maybe a little bit small to play inside linebacker, but hopefully with the league going more and more to a passing sets, that I think that'll be a good move for us, hopefully early on. Our third round pick was Montrevious Adams, a defensive tackle out of Auburn. I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with the team. I think the defensive line is actually pretty deep for us this year. We saw some really good draft picks show up from last year's draft along the defensive line. And I expect that they'll probably take another step in year two to go along with the addition of Ricky Jean Francois and our old stalwart, Mike Daniels. And then fourth round pick Vince Beagle is going to have to play some outside linebacker, except for the fact that he got came and had to have a surgery done. So I think he's expected to miss most of the mini camp and OTAs. Maybe he's back for part of training camp. Maybe he's not. I'm not expecting a whole lot out of him, just given that injury. And quite honestly, even as bad as we were last year along the defensive secondary, I think we ranked 31st overall. I think what I'm more concerned about is our pass rush. And obviously we still have Clay Matthews, and we did end up paying Nick Perry, who was our sack leader from last year. But both of those guys have had a history of injuries. And I think you watched Julius Peppers and Dayton Jones leave. Both of those guys played outside linebacker for us. I'm a little concerned that we're not going to be able to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So that would be my recap of our top four free agents. We also we saw Eddie Lacy leave. I think we went with quantity over quality in the running back game. We just threw a bunch of picks at that position. I think we drafted three guys, hoping that one of them will stick. But I think one of the bright spots of last season, and kind of one of the reasons we turned our season around a little bit, was that we did discover Ty Montgomery. And I think a lot of people don't think that he is big enough to play running back. I think he's like just a couple pounds lighter than Le'Veon Bell, and I don't hear that same argument against him. He played pretty well last year. We didn't give him a ton of carries, and maybe that's part of the reason why there's that sentiment about him. But I think I'm probably higher than even most Packer fans on Ty Montgomery's prospects at running back. So we'll see how the other running backs shake out from the draft. But I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to be in decent shape at that position.
Well, I think my concern with Ty Montgomery is he came into the league as a wide receiver. So he's a converted position. You have to look at it in that perspective. And his body type, I mean, even if he is only a few pounds lighter than Le'Veon Bell, when you look at Le'Veon Bell and you look at Ty Montgomery, you point to the one that looks like a running back. Like, there's just a different way their bodies are constructed. And my concern is, can Ty Montgomery hold up over the course of an entire season?
Yeah, and that'll be the really interesting part. Obviously, I think there's only a couple of games last year where he even got double-digit carries. I think one of them was against Chicago, and he ran for about 160 yards. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he is a converted position. He kind of had to step into that role that he wasn't really ready for last year, and I kind of felt like he acquitted himself well.
Did I hear some rumblings from another superfan?
I just wanted to point out that Montgomery only topped 50 yards three games last year, and I know he didn't have a lot of carries. I mean, personally, I didn't think he looked that bad either. I'm sort of with Brian on it. On the other hand, I understand the skepticism because it isn't like he produced a lot of yards or anything like that last year. The running game wasn't exactly a strong point. So I think it's a legitimate concern. I'm not saying he can't do it, but I understand why people aren't very high on it. Brian, are you concerned about the offensive line? I mean, you lost J.C. Treader. You lost, T.J. Lang. You lost Josh Sitton before the beginning of the season. The tackles are intact, but it looks to me like you've got Lane Taylor and Jari Evans and Don Barkley competing for those guard spots. I don't even know who's starting at center. I mean, I know things were bad last year. Latroy Guion had to start like five snaps in the Atlanta game because of lack of depth. Are you worried about the losses and the fact that maybe you guys haven't gained enough to replace them, particularly in that area?
I think we'll have to see about that. I'm not as concerned as maybe an outsider might be. Obviously, we did lose Josh Sitton last year. That was a lot of the talk that we had on this podcast in the offseason. But I would say that Lane Taylor came in and played pretty well. I don't think you saw the huge drop-off that I think a lot of people were expecting. So I feel like that's a position where I'm not as concerned, that left guard spot. Corey Linsley is our center, and he's a pretty good player. Really, the only opening was created when Lang left. And until we brought in Jari Evans, I was very concerned because I don't think Don Barkley is good at football. So I was happy to see us kind of add a veteran talent there, even if it is a kind of a short-term replacement. I think last year, the offensive line pass blocked really, really, really well. You'd see Aaron Rodgers back there with 6, 7, 8 seconds to throw the ball. Now, whether or not our receivers can get open in that time is another story, but I thought the line played really well. So I think it's obviously going to be a downgrade from Lang to, I'm assuming, Jari Evans. But I'm hoping that given his experience and playing with another Hall of Fame quarterback, that we're going to be able to fill in that position and not lose too much ground.
Aaron Rodgers fields the ball longer than any quarterback I think I've ever seen. So they have to do a pretty good job. And I agree with you. In retrospect, they actually did late in the season do a pretty good job protecting him all in all.
And just so you know, ourlads.com currently has Jari Evans behind Don Barclay.
So. Trust your Green Bay Packers super fan over whatever website you're looking at.
Hey, Our Lads is a very trusted scouting website. All right. What are some of the circle games you've got this season, Brian?
Well, I think our schedule is going to be a lot tougher this year than it was last year. And I really have kind of the early part of the season circled. We open against Seattle. I don't have very good feelings about Seattle. I want to beat the pants off them every time we play them. So I think they match up pretty well, but it's always one of those games that I have circled on our calendar just because I think there is a level of dislike between those two teams. It's usually a pretty entertaining game. So that's the season opener. Then we have to travel to Atlanta. And, you know, as badly as we lost to them in the playoffs last year, and it was ugly. I kind of think we're going to come out there with something to prove. So that's another game I've got circled. Kind of the flip side of that argument. We played Dallas in week 5. In Dallas, and I think they're probably going to have similar feelings about us that I have about Atlanta. So I think that'll be a really good game. I think we have a pretty good chance of losing that one, though. And then we play Minnesota in week 6 at Minnesota, and those are always really tough games. So I think, you know, those are 4 of our first 6 games that I've got circled on our calendar. It'll be, I think if we can find a way to win 2 of those 4, I think we'll be in probably pretty good shape by midseason.
Joe, before I transition to your team, what do you have any thoughts on the Packers?
I think that they're still the class of the NFC North. You know, anytime that you have Aaron Rodgers on your team, you're favored. You're favored in a game. And so did they lose some, you know, players on defense? Yeah, they lost some really good players on defense. You know, he mentioned that Micah Hyde was a role player on that team. I think that he was a defensive cog on that team. D'Tone Jones led the team in pressures per snap. And Julius Peppers, you know, he did things that only a veteran outside linebacker can do. And it also allowed for Clay Matthews to play a little bit more inside linebacker. And so I think that if the Packers are going to struggle, it's going to be on the defensive side of the ball. But again, anytime that you have Aaron Rodgers on your team, you're never out of a ball game.
All right. So with that said, we're going to skip over the Lions for a moment and head to Minnesota and bring in our newest super fan, Joe. And Joe, there's a lot of different questions surrounding this Minnesota Vikings team. There's one that's looming, and we'll get to that one in a moment, and that's about your quarterback position. But let's start with the subtractions on this team, and you lost probably the biggest name in football at this point in Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, losing Adrian Peterson, as a longtime fan of the Vikings, to lose basically a legend of the team, you know, can hurt. You know, if you look at it without the purple colored glasses on, though, the loss of Adrian Peterson is going to be addition by subtraction in that situation. 2 years ago, he led the NFL in rushing in a year in the league where 1,500 yards led the league. And last year he played 3 games, you know, so. His second to last carry with the Vikings was a fumble, which was poetic justice. And so I think that seeing him in week one in Saints is going to be kind of his send off from the Vikings fans. I think that he'll be welcomed to Minnesota warmly, and his first fumble of the season will be cheered warmly. And bon voyage, Adrian Peterson.
So tell me a little bit about the additions that you've made to this team, because you got quite a few.
Yeah, we really went aggressive in free agency, and in true Rick Spielman fashion, we hit the second tier market, and in some cases the third tier market. Started off with Latavius Murray, and Latavius Murray by the start of the season may end up as running back number two. And then we moved on to the offensive line, Mike Remmers and Riley Reiff. Riley Reiff played right tackle for the Lions last year and, you know, didn't grade out great. He's more of a run blocking tackle. And Mike Remmers, also a right tackle for the Carolina Panthers, who, again, didn't grade out great in pass blocking, but he is a sizable upgrade over what we had at both, you know, right and left tackle last year, respectively, with Riley Reiff. And so I think that, you know, just between those three signings right there, you know, we have a chance to be markedly better, you know, in those areas. You know, outside of that, you know, the addition of DeTone Jones, he's kind of a piece for Mike Zimmer that he can put all over the defensive line. I think that you might see in nickel packages more of like what the Giants did in 2007 with their NASCAR package, where we get Hunter, Danielle Hunter, Dayton Jones, Brian Robinson, and Everson Griffin on that defensive line, just wreaking havoc up front. So definitely some pretty quality additions in the offseason by Rick Spielman.
You also added Terrence Newman to your secondary. Is that an upgrade?
Well, Terrence Newman's been with the team and Mike Zimmer for a while now. Old man Zimmer and old man Newman are connected at the hip, it seems like, from their days in Dallas. And Terrence Newman is eventually going to be a coach, probably a coach on Zimmer's coaching staff. I think that, you know, re-signing Newman was important. When our starting strong safety went down last year, Andrew Sandejo, Newman filled in pretty admirably at that position. But you can tell that Newman is a good and very serviceable cornerback when he leads the team in yards allowed per catch. He's so good for Zimmer's defense, and he knows what Zimmer expects on every single snap and play call, that he kept our first round pick Trey Waynes off the field for the last 2 years. So definitely keeping Newman was very important to us.
Talk to me a little bit about your draft. You already sort of alluded that Latavius Murray could be running back two. Your first draft choice was Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, absolutely excited about this. I feel like getting him in the second round at 41 was possibly the steal of the draft. He's already shown in the mini camps and the OTAs just how shifty he can be and just how much the combine drills kind of mean nothing once you get on the football field and let football instincts take over. Then we got Pat Elflein. He's going to be a starting center in this league for 10 to 15 years. He's just got that kind of football knowledge to him, and he's going to be starting center number one. And then Jaleel Johnson. I can't even say enough about this guy, especially with Sharif Floyd and his uncertainty around his injury. Jaleel Johnson, he plays the run so well from the three technique position, and he has sneaky good pass rushing skills, kind of in the form of a Atkins from the Bengals. And so super excited to see what that rookie can come in and do. I think they're going to kind of try to bring him along a little bit. But yeah, really excited about the draft. Low key person that we drafted that I think could really have an outstanding year would be Bucky Hodges, the 6'7" tight end. that we drafted in the sixth round. 4'5", 40. He's got a wide receiver's body. About as big as Kelvin Benjamin, but runs like the wind. And so I think that with Shurmur as our offensive coordinator, I think that he's going to put him in a lot of positions to win.
All right. So we've avoided the question long enough. It's time to get to it. The quarterback, is it Sam Bradford or is it Teddy Two Gloves Bridgewater?
And here I thought, Todd, that you were going to ask me about Mike Zimmer's eye.
I almost did. I almost threw the curveball to go to your coach's eyesight, but I decided not to. I decided to avoid it.
So the Sammy Sleeves is what we call him on Vikings Twitter and Teddy Two Gloves. Oh man, this is going to be a dark cloud that hangs over the Vikings all season, and I think it's ultimately going to be a downfall for our team. Listen, Sam Bradford, 0.9% of his passes that he threw for the last 2 years were intercepted. Only Tom Brady was better. The problem is that he's checked down Charlie. You know, on third downs, I think that his average pass traveled a distance of 5.5 yards. He was exactly what we needed last year to replace Teddy in that emergency situation. He was better than what we were going to get in the first round of the draft this year, as far as experienced quarterback coming into this year, knowing that we weren't going to have Teddy. Teddy's not playing this year. And I think that a lot of Vikings fans need to get that out of their head. There is no chance that he's playing this year. There's videos that just keep popping up on Twitter all over the place. And all it does is set Viking Twitter ablaze, you know, debating who, what, where, why, and if. And I just can't see it happening. Teddy doesn't, he's not driving off of his front leg yet. All of his passes are coming from his back leg. And until I start seeing, you know, strong evidence that, that he's able to drive off that front leg, and seeing him in situations where the pocket is collapsing around him and how he reacts to something like that, I just can't see Teddy getting on the field. And I think that it would be better if the Vikings and their front office would just come out and say that there's no chance that Teddy is playing before week six, because I think that it's detrimental to Sam Bradford to say otherwise.
Wow. Tom, who'd you rather see under center for the Vikings? Teddy Bridgewater or Sam Bradford?
I've had a love affair with Teddy since he was drafted, since way before he was drafted. And I was crushed when he went to the Vikings because I thought he was going to be a star by now. He's not really lived up to my expectations yet. But I'm afraid I have to agree with Joe with that injury. I think, from everything I've heard about that injury, I know they're making a big deal. He's moving around at the mini camp and all that stuff, but I can't imagine he'll be ready to play. If he is, I'd much rather have him than Bradford, no doubt about it. You talked about the signings on the offensive line. The offensive line is way, way the biggest weakness the Vikings have had. It used to be we talk about the cornerbacks, but not anymore. The line doomed them last year, really. You got Mike Remmers. I think that was a good signing, but you signed Riley Reiff, who played tackle on another bad offensive line last year with the Lions, and he wasn't exactly quality because they didn't want him back. You didn't do anything at guard, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, or center. Do you really think they're going to be that much better than good enough to where, you know, you guys are going to be competitive?
Well, I would say yes, and I would say emphatically yes. We were 31st in the league last year in rushing the ball. The year before that, we had the league's leading rusher, and in both cases, we had almost exactly the same line that we started in 2015 into 2016, with the addition of Alex Boone, who's a run heavy guard, if you will. Adding Pat Elflein from, you know, Ohio State is definitely going to improve that. We had TJ revolving door Clemmings at left tackle last year. The guy couldn't block his own shadow. He's bad. He's gone. Anything that you could stick at left tackle over TJ Clemmings was going to be an improvement in that situation. We went through three right tackles on the offensive line. It was like anybody that you stuck in there was doomed to get hurt. And so adding Mike Remmers over there, again, is going to be an upgrade over what we had over there. We drafted Danny Isadora from Miami in the fifth round. Is he going to start? I don't know. But Mike Zimmer is raving about TJ Clemmings back at guard. And that's where TJ Clemmings was probably his best, was playing at guard in 2015. And so do I think that the offensive line is going to be better? Yeah, I think that the offensive line is going to be better. Is it going to be an offensive line that produces 2,100 yards rushing and, keeps Sam Bradford clean? No. But Sam Bradford played behind a much worse line last year, and he came out okay. The thing about Sam Bradford is he throws a really pretty deep ball. We added Michael Floyd to the team, who is a great deep threat. We still have Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Bucky Hodges, the super fast tight end that we have, and Treadwell's coming around. I think that offensive line is really going to give them enough of a boost that it could decide one or two games a season. And really, after going 8-8, one or two games going the other way puts us at 10-6 and likely a playoff team.
Just so you know, I'm once again on ourlads.com. They have the offensive line set up as left tackle Riley Reiff, left guard Alex Boone, center Nick Easton currently, right guard Joe Berger, right tackle Mike Remmers. And honestly, I do think that's a better offensive line than what we've seen from the Vikings before. But I would add, if we're going to call Sam Bradford a checkdown passer, Latavius Murray and Dalvin Cook are both pass reception or pass receiving running backs, which I think will go a long way in helping those deep threats that Joe just mentioned. I mean, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are both known for getting open deep. And let's not forget, Kyle Rudolph is a very serviceable tight end. He may not be a top 10 tight end, but he is pretty good.
I agree. Biggest concern with Rudolph is that last year was only his second year since he's come into the league that he's played all 16 games. And so to count on Rudolph for 16 games, do so at your own caution. But when he's on the field, he's Sam's favorite target. So definitely have some weapons for Bradford. And in Shermer's offense, we are not going to be a power running team. We're going to be a out of the shotgun, inside zone, outside zone running team anyway. But we had to be better than where we were at 31st in the league. Up until the final 3 weeks of the season, we were historically bad at running the football. And so ourlads.com, whatever it is that has that depth chart set, it's not happening. Pat Elflein was drafted far too high and has shown way too much to be surpassed by even Joe Berger, who was our starting center last year. And, Nick Easton, I just don't see it. Definitely think that Elflein is our starting center to begin the season.
Another shot across the bow of the scouting guys at Our Lads. Wow. Before we transition to Chicago, Joe, what are your circle games for this season?
Oh, man, if I had to circle, I would probably circle the first six weeks of the season. I mean, we kick off the season in week one on Monday night against the Saints. So Adrian Peterson's final homecoming. The first 6 weeks, if you look at it, Saints at Steelers, Buccaneers versus Lions at Bears and versus Packers. We struggle to win in Chicago. I don't think that we have a win in Chicago in the Zimmer era. The Buccaneers offense is going to be ridiculous. The Saints or the Steelers, we know what they can do, and it's in Pittsburgh. The Lions, we lost to twice, two very close losses last year. Sam Bradford, you know, he threw both of those games away. And then, of course, against the Packers. The nice thing about the Packers, the Lions, the Bucks, and the Saints is we get them all at home. We could start that season 0-6. We could start that that portion of the season 4-2. Ultimately, I have us going 8-8, 9-7. I think that the schedule in the last 5 weeks of the season also gets brutal, and so I think that Zimmer's record in close games being 500, you know, it's pretty indicative of what the team is. And 8-8, 9-7 sounds like a record that, but I mean, they could easily go 10-6, 12-4, depending on how the ball bounces.
So I guess before I transition, I should do my due diligence. Is Mike Zimmer's eyesight something that we should be concerned about? Is it going to be a distraction for this team?
I don't think that it is. From every thing that is being reported out of Winter Park, Mike Zimmer's retina is back in place, and that he has a very good chance that that retina is going to hold in place and no gas bubbles are going to come up behind it. I think that the week off during minicamp, you know, really helped. And I think that Mike Zimmer is going to be just fine. And not to mention Mike Zimmer can outcoach at least three of the coaches in the NFC North with one eye. Mike McCarthy, you know, he has some good records under his belt. So I don't know if I would put him past Mike McCarthy with just one eye yet, though.
So many different jokes that I'm going to avoid. And Brian, I didn't give you a chance to talk about the Vikings. Anything that stands out to you?
No, you kind of touched on the piece that I was most interested in, which was the quarterback. I guess the one thing I would add is with the state of the offensive line last year, one thing that really surprised me was how well Sam Bradford held up, because he's been a guy who historically has battled injuries as well. And I think it'll be interesting to see if that was an aberration last year or if, you know, that offensive line this year puts him at risk for that again. I think with Teddy Bridgewater, I don't like him as much as Tom does. I don't know that anybody likes him as much as Tom does, maybe not even his parents. but I think you talk about those major injuries, and I'm obviously not a doctor, but I tend to think that it takes a year or two to get back to where you were, and that where he was, I think he was, you know, an ascending player, but not maybe, probably falls into the middle 10 quarterbacks of the league, not in the top 10, not in the bottom 10, but just somewhere in the middle. So I think we're probably a year or two removed from seeing any signs of life from Teddy Bridgewater, unless there is an injury to Sam Bradford.
All right. So, Tom, I don't know if you've listened to many of the other podcasts that we've done that I've been on. I have not been very kind to the Chicago Bears. My opinion of the Chicago Bears right now is not very good. If we had a picture of that's what not getting better looks like, we're looking at the Chicago Bears. I'm just going to start right away with the quarterback position, and not so much the way that Mitch Trubisky ended up on the football team, but just the simple fact that, and we've talked about this before, so we don't have to hammer it all the way home, but I'll bring it up again. You have a quarterback that you had to spend a lot of capital to obtain on your football team in a class that was not regarded very well. And your current slated starter is a guy that you acquired from another quarterback class that we have absolutely hammered. We hammered it hard this offseason. And then you have the third quarterback who's famous for fumbling a football because he ran into his offensive lineman's butt. So I don't feel very good about the situation for the Chicago Bears right now.
Well, I don't feel very good about it either. And before I answer your question, if you're a Bears fan and you're listening to this and you don't want to hear criticism, heavy criticism, you might want to either skip ahead or, you know, put me on double time so I sound like Mickey Mouse and you don't have to take me seriously, because there isn't going to be much positive here. It is not because of the quarterback situation. I happen to like what they did at quarterback. I went back and watched Mike Glennon, some of his games, 2013, and I saw what Ryan Pace saw, the GM. I think he's underrated. I think he was pretty accurate. I didn't think he had very much at receiver, but he always had to put the ball where only the receiver could catch it, and that made for some passes that were tough to catch. So I know statistically he wasn't great, but it looked to me like the ball always went where he wanted it to. He moves in the pocket pretty well. He's got underrated mobility. I think he's a legitimate swing at the position. I know that most people think that he's a placeholder right now, and I think that's a reasonable thing to think when you took Mitch Trubisky number two overall. But I don't believe that Glennon doesn't have a shot at being the guy on this team. I think they signed him because they thought he had a legitimate chance to be a franchise quarterback with some more snaps. You know, he hasn't seen that much since 2014. Trubisky, I know there's a lot of criticism, but if you read the criticism and you look at it, and you look what scouts said about him, the only real bad thing they had to say about him was he needed time to develop. He's going to get that. There were no other criticisms that I heard. He was the only quarterback prospect that anybody could characterize as accurate. And he is apparently, by reputation, I have not seen that much of him, very accurate. It was apparently an event when a ball hit the ground in their practice facility at North Carolina. So I think that, you know, given what the scouts say, if time is all he needs, then he's going to get that. Now, whether they have the coaching staff to develop him or not is an open question. Dal Loganes was the quarterback coach in Cleveland when they drafted Johnny Manziel. By all most accounts, he got that entire staff, that entire organization fired because he pushed them to take Manziel when the head coach didn't want him and when the general manager didn't want him. And it basically was the last straw, and that organization collapsed. So putting all your faith in that guy to develop a quarterback, you know, it's questionable, but I'll give it a shot. I don't think their main problem is there. They have two major issues. One is lack of scoring. They were 28th in scoring offense last year. And the other one is lack of takeaways. They were minus 20 in turnover differential. That's dead last in the league. They have a problem in that the only way that really they're going to improve this year is through better health. They didn't sign much in the offseason in free agency. They did enough with second-tier free agents to revamp their defensive backfield. They've got Prince Amukamara and Marcus Cooper as cornerback. But really, truthfully, they didn't do much there. And in the draft, they took a bunch of projects. I mean, they took guys from places like Ashland, North Carolina, AT&T. Their fifth rounder, Jordan Morgan, is from someplace called Cootstown. And so,
by the way, just to jump in real quick, though, Adam Shaheen was a guy that I very much wanted to see on the New England Patriots as a backup tight end. So despite his locale, I think he's a solid talent for your team.
He's apparently very talented, Pod, but he's never faced adversity. He physically dominated. I mean, from everything I can tell, he was a man amongst boys there. And when he gets up against guys who have, you know, something close to his own athletic ability, it's an open question about how he's going to perform and how he's going to react. And that's really the truth with all these guys almost. When you're projecting guys out, you're adding risk to a process that's already really risky. And in my opinion, they needed something closer to what they did in 2016 when they found guys like Cody Whitehair and Jordan Howard. Instead, they went with these projects, probably figuring because they're rebuilding and they've got time, but there's a lot of risk there that I don't think I would have wanted to take. In terms of getting healthier again, the injuries on this team last year were unbelievable. Pro Football Outsiders does a statistic called adjusted games lost. And the Bears were last in the league in that statistic. And not only were they last in the league in 2016, it was the worst of any team since the turn of the century. That's how bad the injuries were. They lost Kyle Long to an ankle injury. He had surgery in the offseason. He still got a partially torn labrum. He's not back yet. They lost Danny Trevathan. He ruptured his patellar tendon. He's not back yet. Pernell McPhee had shoulder surgery. He's on the field, but he lost like 10 pounds or something like that. And nobody knows how he's going to perform. Leonard Floyd was the first round draft pick. They need him to rush the passer. He showed some encouraging signs when he was on the field, but he had two concussions. And they're talking about, they're teaching him to tackle better and, you know, keep his head up. And yeah, sure, I'm sure that'll help. But the incidence of concussions doesn't help. And the history in the league of guys that have shown that they're prone to that is not great. And if you ask me, two concussions in one season within a month, you're talking about a guy and you have to really wonder if he's going to be in the league in 2018. I mean, this is a make or break year for him just in terms of health. So all those guys are carrying over into 2017. You've got not only that, they can't even stay healthy in OTAs. No contact. They're not doing anything but jogging around the field. Mark Sanchez has some sort of a leg injury that, you know, it's unspecified, but they said, yeah, they think he'll be back for training camp, but they weren't so sure of it that they didn't call Connor Shaw, who they'd released that morning. He was on the road in Kentucky, and they told him to turn around and come back, and they withdrew him from waivers. Cam Meredith, who they're depending upon at wide receiver and a really weak wide receiver core, he injures his tendon in his thumb or something like that. He had to have surgery. And, you know, they're talking about him being back for camp, but who knows, you know? So, you know, the only thing I can say is, you know, the Bears, if I had a suggestion for them, I'd get a priest in at Hallis Hall and have them do an exorcism, or, you know, maybe they should sacrifice a goat or something, because right now God hates them. But that's their hope, that they're going to be more healthy, that all these guys will come back and not just be able to play, but be able to play at their pre-injury level. Whether that's realistic or not, your guess is as good as mine. But that's their path to improvement, and we'll see. If they all stay healthy, then that'd be really good. They'll be strong along both lines, which is the way that I love to see a team built. Their guard tandem with Josh Sitton and Kyle Long, two of the best in the league together. And Cody Whitehair, still a very underrated player. He showed as a rookie that he's becoming one of the best centers in the league. So the interior of their offensive line in particular is very strong. They've got Akeem Hicks at defensive end. He was a very pleasant surprise last year. They got Eddie Goldman, who they drafted. He did a great job last year. At linebacker, they'll have Trevathan and Charles Freeman. They'll have some good pass rushers with Floyd and with Willie Young and Pernell McPhee. If they're all healthy, you know, that all looks pretty good, and they'll approach 500 at least. But I think depending upon those guys to be healthy is like holding your breath.
Let's go back a second to the offensive line. You mentioned the strong interior, but who are these guys playing tackle? Charles Leno, Bobby Macy?
Yeah, the Bears think really highly of Charles Leno. I think that he gets a bad rap nationally. I don't think he's a really good left tackle, but I think he's adequate. And he's athletic enough to where they still think he's developing. I know that nationally that is not the view, and I understand it. It does not help that he's playing on a 3-13 team. You don't get the benefit of the doubt when that is happening, and that has been very evident the way they've treated me all season, and they deserve it. But I think they might be okay there. I think he's middle of the league, really, truthfully, in how he plays. Yeah, they're not as satisfied with Bobby Massey. They tried to replace him in the offseason by signing someone in free agent. I can't remember who it was they went after. It may have been the guy that the Lions signed, not bad to the point where he's a turnstile, and your quarterback is looking to get killed like every other snap. So I would call their tackles adequate to slightly below adequate. It isn't like they couldn't use improvement there. I agree with that, but I think they're okay. And the Bears, in fairness, they've concentrated on the middle of the line because their philosophy is, and this is shared by a number of teams around the league, most notably the Saints, who believe in this. If you're strong in the interior and you keep the pocket clean in front of the quarterback, he can step up and he can avoid guys coming from the outside if your tackles maybe aren't as good as you'd like them to be. And so that's the plan with them, and I don't really mind that. I think that works if you've got the right kind of quarterback. You know, you're looking at Mike Glennon, what is he, like 6'7" or something like that. And you know, he can see easily over the line. He's a pocket passer. I think keeping the pocket clean in front of him will really help him. So they're forming the kind of offense to where maybe they can be a little weak at tackle and get by with it.
Well, I will say actually more in the defense of that would be the names that you brought in the wide receiver position. So you mentioned that they're going to be relying on Cam Meredith. You still have Kevin White, who knows in that position, but you do pick up Marcus Wheaton, Kendall Wright, Reuben Randall, Victor Cruz, Josh Bellamy. These are all guys that should help in the passing game.
I think they could help in the passing game. There's a reason why all those guys were available to pick up. I think all
listen, I'm not saying that these are like Calvin Johnson or even Alshon Jeffrey type replacement players, but they are players that should be able to fit in a system that will make Mike Glennon look better than he actually is.
I think that is a possibility. I think that Eddie Royal has been dead weight. He was a major disappointment. I liked that signing when they made it and turned out to be a problem. Couldn't stay healthy. Jeffrey left. He just didn't want to be on the team. I mean, there was a saying a long time ago, Machine Muhammad said it when he went back to Carolina. He said Chicago is where wide receivers go to die. And it's been pretty much true. And I think Jeffrey recognized that, or at least he thought it. And he got out of town and signed what wasn't a very big deal with the Eagles because he just wanted a chance to perform somewhere else. And I'm hoping that things will improve. I don't have high hopes. In particular, just to highlight one guy why I have some questions, Kendall Wright had his best year in 2013 when Dell Loganes, the offensive coordinator, was the offensive coordinator with the Titans. And I've heard that a lot, and I think that's great. But the truth of the matter is that this guy hasn't performed ever since then. And when a guy leaves a team and he blames the team for his lack of production, the way that Wright has just hammered the Titans in the offseason, one national writer said that he thought it was equivalent to Wright's retirement speech. And I got to tell you, I kind of agree with that. When a guy is pointing fingers like that, a lot of the times that means that he's going to come in and fail. And I don't know that he's going to be all that big of a pickup. Marcus Wheaton, yeah, there's potential there. You know, I know our Steelers super fan really likes him, but he had Antonio Brown on the other side when he was with the Steelers, and he got nobody like that now. So, you know, unless Kevin White somehow performs better, you know, he's a major talent. But if you watched him last year when he was on the game, he only played 4 games. Boy, he has work to do on his route running. I mean, I'm no wide receivers coach, but this guy looked at me like he was just all over the place, you know, and they were just letting him play, and I'm glad they did that, but he needs major work. He is a work in progress, and I don't know if he's a number one receiver yet. I don't even know if 1 year will be enough to make him into one. I think he's got the talent to be one. I wouldn't hold my breath. I'm hoping he'll develop. We'll just have to wait and see at the position. Lots of question marks. It feels like, honestly, Pod, you named all the names. Those guys are all darts that you throw at the board, and you hope that, you know, a couple of them stick. And it might happen, but it might not. We'll just have to wait and see how it all works out.
Yeah, I mean, to me, as I look at those names that I mentioned, I think Marcus Wheaton will ultimately end up developing into a nice weapon for you. I agree with you. I think Kendall Wright might be a little overrated, but where I think you have some gems, Josh Bellamy, I think, is underrated as a wide receiver prospect. And I think he will have a chance, if he sticks with the team, to develop quite nicely for you, especially behind those Giants, those former Giants in Reuben Randall and Victor Cruz. We can say whatever we want about those two particular players. They are veteran players. They are players that run nice routes. When you talk about watching other wide receivers who don't know how to run routes, both those guys do know how to run routes. And I think that will ultimately help a team as it's looking to develop. I mean, I said it before, and I'll reveal to you my win-loss prediction for this particular team, because honestly, I don't know how to go about which games you've got circled for your season here, Tom, because I'm looking at you as a 3-13 team, with a split against the Packers, a split against the Lions, and then picking up a victory against Cleveland, because I do think you might have a little bit more talent than Cleveland has. But other than that, I mean, the season looks pretty bleak here if you're a Chicago fan.
Yeah, Josh Bellamy is going to have a hard time making the team. He's going to have to hold his place on special teams. That's going to be very hard. We'll have to wait and see. And he had some major drops last year. I mean, he really single-handedly, I hate to say it, he blew a game by dropping a ball in the end zone. So we'll just have to, yeah, I really felt bad for Matt Barkley, because he could have won that game if he'd have caught that ball. As far as games I have circled, the over-under in Las Vegas is 5.5. That's about right. I don't blame anyone for taking the under. Three games is fine. I don't blame you, for doing that. We have different reasons for it. I think I've made it clear. I do not expect them to be good. They won't be competitive this year unless they stay very healthy. And there are a few signs that that's going to happen. In terms of the games, I don't think the schedule is really that bad. They drew the AFC North. That's a rugged division, but they do have the Browns. That's a potential win. I'm sure the Browns see the Bears that way too. They drew the last place team in the NFC West. That's the 49ers. That's a potential win. I'm sure the 49ers think that about the Bears too. It's the first four games that worry everyone around here, because they're tough games. They have the Falcons, then the Buccaneers, the Steelers, and the Packers. They could easily go 0-4 in those games. The Buccaneers, a winnable game, but not, you know, that right now most people would pick the Bucs, and I don't blame them for that. If they get through those four and they're not 0-4, then the rest of the schedule, if they're a decent team, doesn't look that bad. But those are the four that everyone has circled. And I would agree that that's going to be a severe test. They could get off to a miserable year, miserable start. And if they get off to a miserable start and they were miserable last year, it could snowball. And we have a nice veteran head coach. I like John Fox better than most people. But, you know, it might be hard to control a team and keep them on the right track after a start like that. He talks about the attitude of his team. They lack talent. They didn't have a single player in the NFL Network's top 100. I think that list is a joke. The biggest proof of that is the fact that Jordan Howard wasn't on it. But nevertheless, it does highlight their lack of talent, but they like the attitudes of all the players on the team. Well, you know, we may see a severe test of the attitudes on the team if they go 0-4 those first four games.
Joe and Brian, I'm not really going to give you a chance to talk about the Bears specifically at this particular moment. I want to bring in our guest to talk about the Lions here. So when we don't have a super fan to represent the Detroit Lions on our podcast, it does come in helpful that I am the head of content at Blog Talk Radio. And that gives me access to a lot of the guys over at SB Nation. And so I'm proud to bring in the editor of Pride of Detroit and host of the Pride of Detroit POD podcast from SB Nation, Chris Lemieux. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Really? You don't have any super fans. We have very famous super fans in Detroit, but I guess most of them just don't use a computer or something. I don't know.
Something about that. We've been in need of a Lions super fan for about, Since midway of last season, yeah.
So I think back in 2014, I went to a game at Ford Field, and I sat right in front of one of our super fans we have, who is called not a great nickname, but his name was Crackman. Ron Cracchiola, or John Cracchiola. I'm always bad with first names. You can look him up on Google. Old guy, gray hair, wears a hard hat, jean overalls. And it was the September 21st game against the Packers. The Lions never trailed the whole game. They opened the game with like a, it was either a pick six or a fumble return for a touchdown. I forget. But this guy just sat behind me and just cursed and muttered the whole time, just upset at everything. So I just found that fascinating. I found out later he was a super fan. So that's where the bar for our super fans are at.
Listen, when you go by Crackman, I don't think you need to have a first
Again,
name.
Again, he does not look like anyone you would name Crackman. He does not look like it at all. This guy looks like someone's grandfather. I don't know how he got the... It's a very unfortunate nickname.
It might be unfortunate, but that is going down right now on some soundboard at some point. Crackman. So we've been doing division previews here. We're doing the NFC North. The other super fans for the rest of your division have given their thoughts and ideas on how they believe their seasons are going to move forward. So now we bring you in to talk about the Detroit Lions, and just tell me a little bit about what the general consensus is about the Lions as we move into the 2017 season.
Well, 2016 was probably the most exciting. I'm not saying this with any kind of flair or pomp to it, but 2016 was probably one of the most exciting years I've seen out of the Detroit Lions. You can talk some of these other playoff years. You can talk about the 90s or whatever, but just as a season that just had no expectations, that had no understanding of what was going to happen, and yet every game was just a nail biter and nearly stopped your heart, was incredibly special. As we go into 2017, there are now, again, once again, the Lions seem to do this thing for the past 6 years or so where they make the playoffs as a wild card, expectations go up for the next year, then the Lions' record falls down. There's always muttering there. People look at the head coach wondering if he's going to get fired. And then the year after it, they just go right back to the playoffs. I think what you want, the expectations are back here. And I think this time you can at least warrant some of those expectations to maybe make the playoffs. I don't know if they will, but like as they did in 2016, they have to rely on Matt Stafford. And unfortunately, that's going to get a little harder now because of the news of Taylor Decker, who was, we believe, injured during OTAs. He was the starting left tackle, and he had a great freshman year in the NFL. And unfortunately, he's undergoing shoulder surgery. He might be out for the whole season, if not well into the late end of the season, where he might return. And that position on the left tackle hasn't really been patched up. So it's going to be interesting to see where Stafford goes from there. And I think the expectation is going to be competitive. It's going to be a tough NFC North again. And once again, there's still a billion questions the defense needs to answer and probably can't answer with this current buildup, which is more of a long-term situation than anything to fix. So it's going to be a team where there's going to be probably a lot of offense again, maybe. And the defense is going to hopefully just hold on for dear life.
You don't have a lot of faith in Greg Robinson and the left side? Come on now.
Greg Robinson's fascinating. And so we just interviewed Jeff Schwartz, who is a former guard in the NFL. And he was with the Lions for a brief amount of time, as they would say, to get a cup of coffee. We talked with him about Greg Robinson. He's got a piece. I'm going to pimp his piece out right now on SB Nation about, you know, how Greg Robinson, you know, he's got a pretty good future ahead of him. And he points to the fact that he's pretty well set up with the Lions. Like Greg Robinson was a very dominant, offensive lineman coming out of college with that Auburn system with Gus Malzahn and, you know, those incredibly fun Auburn teams, but it didn't really translate as well to the NFL. But Schwartz believes that Robinson's in a pretty good spot to really get his career back on track with the Detroit Lions.
Where is Matthew Stafford going to lean? So the team might be leaning on Matthew Stafford, but he's going to need some weapons to help him out there. And, you know, I see Golden Tate as being another year older. I see Marvin Jones as, maybe, I don't know, would we call it failed transition to Detroit?
Well, I think that's hard to say. Any first year you get to a new team, it takes a while to really acclimate, get familiar. Marvin Jones was, I think he ended the season with numbers pretty round near where Golden Tate was. The problem is that Detroit, really after Calvin Johnson, just doesn't have a clear number one. Tate and Jones kind of separate between the two. Tate's been on the record recently saying he feels like he's underpaid. I kind of agree. Golden Tate is very good, and I think you'll see more out of him again. The one loss the Lions are probably going to have is Anquan Boldin, who Stafford leaned on quite a bit in 2016. Now, Anquan hasn't said what he's going to do. There's a chance he re-ups with the team, but I have been hearing that it's probably going to be either retirement for him or he wants to play somewhere closer to his family in Florida. So if that's the case, though, then the Lions are probably going to look for someone in that slot role who really is going to fill in that role. I mean, they could go back to Eric Ebron. We'll have to see about that. They drafted Michael Roberts, another tight end who was at Toledo, a very good red zone threat. I think who's turning heads right now in camp, though, is another drafted receiver, Kenny Golladay. I don't know if he moves to the slot or what they even do about the slot, but I think what you're going to see is, you know, you'll probably see more of what you saw in 2016, where the Lions, when they throw, they spread the ball out across the field. There really is no one person to lean on right now. It could be Tate. It could be Jones. It could be Theo Riddick out of the backfield, who he's not a great runner, but he's a great receiving threat. And his loss during the season in 2016 really put a damper on the team. It's going to be going to a lot of people.
All I know about the Detroit offense is what our super fans keep telling me. And there's just three words you just have to say: Jim Bob Cooter. That's it. It's Jim Bob Cooter.
We're doing this. It's been multiple years since we've had Jim Bob Cooter here. I guess that's still an oddity for a lot of people, but I don't know. I've just gotten so tired of saying Jim Bob Cooter's name that I barely even register it at this point. I also live down the South, so it just kind of like, yeah, no, that's just a name. That's what we do here. It's people have fun with it. But hey, you know what? Do your thing. It's great. Yeah, no, we've made our Jim Bob Cooter jokes already. I don't know what to really think about his offense, really, at the end of the day. Like, it's been very well vaunted. I think a lot of that credit, you got to give it to Matt Stafford. Like, he's just taken that next step in his game. I think Cooter's offense is very well adjusted for him, but I'm still waiting to see what he can do with the run game, because when he came in originally midseason 2015, there was emphasis towards that power block scheme and the counter block action. Now they've gotten rid of Michael Burton, the fullback, kind of a sign. You didn't see much of that in 2016. I don't know where he's really taking the ground game yet. And obviously, I mean, this is the Lions. They've always been they've been last for years in the run game, or near close to last. They've always relied on Matt Stafford's arm. So we'll have to. So, I mean, it's really hard to see what impact a good ground game would be. But I would hope that, you know, Cooter can put something together, and hopefully Amir Abdullah can stay healthy enough to exploit it.
So it's a lot of talk about the offense. How about that defensive side of the ball?
Oh boy, where to start? I love talking this defense. This defense is this was the GOAT of the 2016 year. And by GOAT, I'm not saying the capital letters. I mean the old sense, the great GOAT to be sacrificed. This was not a good defense last year. This was really not. And a lot of that came at linebacker. There really was nothing really to say there about the linebacker core. This year, they jettisoned DeAndre Levy for some reason I'm still not quite sure of, but they drafted first overall for the draft Jared Davis. I always say his name wrong. Jared Davis. He's going to be playing Mike, and he is probably even as a rookie, probably going to try to be the linchpin of that middle of the field because there really isn't much else. There's probably Tahir Whitehead, who's probably the longest interred at this point. They have Antoine Williams from last year, Paul Warlow, who they picked up off the street in the offseason. Like they've got options, but there needs to be answers when it comes to it. On the line, you've got some good guys and you've got some aging guys and you've got guys who got to prove it. I love A'shaun Robinson, second round pick last year for the Lions out of Alabama. Man is huge. He eats space like that's really good for stopping and opponents in their ground game is a guy like A'shaun. Now, when it comes to pass rush, the Lions weren't that good. And Ziggy Ansah, he's got a lot to prove this year, I think. He is probably the one, Ezekiel Ansah, I think, is probably the person with the most to prove right now because we've had a couple of good years out of Ansah, but then you've had a couple of mediocre years where he's just been kind of invisible. And I mean, if the Lions have an effective pass rush, they're going to need it from Ansah. Now, out of the secondary, I'm okay there because they have Darius Slay. They have Darius Slay, who is, if you've people don't know him too well, he is probably one of the better, if not in that upper echelon, top echelon of corners out there. He just plays for the Detroit Lions, so a lot of people kind of ignore it. But big play Slay, shut down Slay. He kind of does a little bit of everything, and he's had big interceptions last year, and he's probably going to be the one to lean on. Safety's a little less certain about, but I mean, Glover Quinn's there and they've got the rookie Jalen Tease Tabor. Tease is probably going to need a few years to adjust. So you might not see too much out of him, but he is a name to watch as the future grows. And I would hope he does grow because then you could line Slay and Tabor up on opposite sides and just watch that shut down.
What are your circle games? Which games are you most looking forward to this season?
I hate to pull the this is the NFL card. Everything is important, but it really is. Like, this is like, I cover a lot of college football too, and it's not really like there's games that you can really say or point out. And the NFL is so wild that one team that might be good one year is just going to fall apart the next. So I really don't know what to say. I'll just say off the top of my head, like, I mean, it's kind of cliche to go for the primetime games, right? Like Pittsburgh on Sunday night. And then next week, then the week after that, in Lambeau against the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. I would say looking at the schedule, though, like late in the season, going on the road to Tampa Bay, that feels like a trap game if there ever was one. Not to use a college term, but it does feel like a trap game playing against an offense like Tampa Bay's, especially in their own place. And then otherwise, just circle Vikings, circle Packers, I guess. I mean, maybe Cardinals to start the year, but if you lose early in the year, it's a loss, but I don't really think too much of it. So yeah, those are the six games I'm circling.
We're going to ignore the Bears, that they're not relevant.
Well, everyone does. We own the Bears. That's the POD hashtag. We own the Bears.
There you go.
They've only won once in the past, I don't know how many years, but the guys over at Windy City Gridiron knows the joke. We have to rip them.
I am not all that optimistic on the Lions this season, and it just could be because I'm not in the Detroit area or really an NFC guy either. But I've got the Lions slated for a 6-10 season. That might be a little pessimistic.
No, that's probably on the lower end of the reasonable records. I think 6-10. It's hard to see them. I think some of our guys kind of, especially with it's really hard to understate this Decker news. I know like the Lions made a lot of news restructuring the right side of their offensive line. They got Rick Wagner and TJ Lang, and they've got some stuff that they're working on for the left side, but losing Decker is huge. It really is when it comes to protection of Stafford. And that plus the just kind of mediocre state of this defense means that I could see something like a 6-10 or 7-8 or 7-9. I think my record is probably going to be closer to like my expectation is closer to like an 8-8 or a 9-7. But what we're still saying here is basically like the road to double digit wins would require some of the magic being retained that they had last year, plus marked improvements from both Stafford, who's already doing as much as he can, and marked improvements from the defense, which I don't really trust as much. Like, you need to see a lot improving across there, especially when the NFC North is this brutal again, and you have the schedule like the Lions have. There's really not a lot of favors on this schedule. So, I mean, they're playing the Falcons here. I forgot to circle that one. I guess I should. Oops. Sorry, Falcons. You let up a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl. I'm sorry. I'm not giving you your goddamn due. So, like, yeah, I mean, it's, but still, like, I think you're right there. Like, 6-10 is in, it's a little pessimistic, but it's within the realm of possibility. And if that happens, we'll have to see what happens with Jim Caldwell.
Yeah. See, from a macro standpoint, as I look at the league and I think about the Lions and I try and set them up in a tier, like putting them right in that middle tier, I think is about right for Detroit. And then you bring up a team like the Buccaneers that I also think is in the middle tier, but they're in the middle tier with the arrow pointing up. You mentioned, you know, making improvements. That team is certainly working hard to make the improvements. And it looks like, at least on paper, and this is all on paper, that it looks like they're moving in a positive direction. To me, the Lions just look like they're treading water. And so when I go through my game by game predictions and I look at those two teams in a way too early to be looking at that particular game, because we have no idea who's going to be healthy, what the situation's going to be, all of that good stuff. That's the way that I'm looking at that particular game. And that's where I give an edge to the Buccaneers over the Lions.
I wouldn't say treading water necessarily. I think some parts of this team had to be like after the 2014 run, there were definitely some parts of this team that needed to be reloaded, right? Like, especially on like the offense at the time was aging and the defense wasn't good. Or maybe I have them backwards. I forget. Either way. Like, but I think what the state that you've got to now with the Lions, with Bob Quinn at general manager, is that you have seen the offense pretty much nearly get fixed. I mean, again, if Taylor Decker wasn't undergoing this injury, I'd be pretty content with the offense right now. Could they use some better running back core? Sure, but they've got Amir Abdullah. He can show what he can, and you know we've seen the evolution of Stafford, especially after last year. Stafford moved into this, some people have been arguing like where to put Stafford. And I think you've got to put him in this upper echelon of quarterbacks. And if you have that, if Stafford keeps growing and keeps showing you that this is what he is, there's no reason right now to doubt the Detroit Lions offense. The key issue is going to be on the defense. And I still think that is a work in progress, because you just saw over the last couple of seasons, just the linebacker core got decimated and the defensive line is old or understaffed. And it still really is that way. I mean, Haloti Ngata is one of your starting tackles and he's been in here forever. I don't know how much he can keep going on, but it's just that front seven needs a lot of work. And unfortunately, that's just where the Lions have been getting burned, because that's where offense is turning in the NFL. It's turning to the short game. It puts more emphasis on your front seven to really step up and stop a lot of that. And the Lions just all last year got burned by it. So, I mean, I think they are, I wouldn't say treading water. I think they're improving. I think it's a slight slow improvement, but a lot has to be made again of Matt Stafford's progression. Like, the Matt Stafford we had in 2016 was not the Matt Stafford the last few years. Like, he was just playing unconscious, even with the mauled hand.
Before I let you go, how do you stack the Lions in the division? Obviously, you have them over the Bears. Where do you stack them against the Vikings and the Packers?
This is a tough one, because I really don't know how to read the Packers right now. I would say. No, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know how to really stack them, because I don't really understand. I don't really have a good reading on the Vikings. I think I would put them 2 with the Vikings at a 2A. You know, the Vikings need to show me that their offense isn't just going to completely just fall apart. And the Lions swept the Vikings in the in the season series last year. So, I mean, there's really no reason for me to think right now that the Vikings are on paper better than the Detroit Lions. Yeah, both games kind of came down to the wire. It took overtime and an interception on Thanksgiving, but like they still beat them both those times. They kept the games close. They kept them earnest. And I don't really see the solution that the Vikings have at their quarterback, even if Teddy Bridgewater comes back. The Packers still remain number one. It's really hard to argue against Aaron Rodgers. But I don't think the rest of their team got deservedly much better. Like, I don't, other than Aaron Rodgers, there really isn't a lot of reason to trust the Packers. And that's been that way for years, though. And I'm just making that clear. It's been that way for years. And the Packers still keep winning the division and going to the playoffs, even with Aaron Rodgers. So, but the Lions, they're getting closer. They're getting closer to the Packers. They really are. But I don't know if they're ready to snatch that division crown yet.
All right, Chris, where can people find you?
Okay, so prideofdetroit.com, at prideofdetroit on Twitter. My personal account is right now at adequatehost. Keep thinking about trying to change that handle. It is the adequate host because I am the adequate host of the POD cast. But I barely talk about sports on my account. You can follow me if you like, just really bad jokes, random video game thoughts, political talk, and maybe talk about sports now and then. Other than that, the Pride of Detroit podcast is on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and I believe Stitcher. And that's where we mostly ramble about the Lions.
There you go. Chris Lemieux, Pride of Detroit, SB Nation. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great one.
Yep. Have a good one.
All right, guys, before I let everybody go, let's just sort of wrap up the division with your thoughts on how you see the season progressing for the division as a whole. And we'll start at the top again. Brian, what do you think?
Well, I think when you got Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, you kind of set the floor pretty high. I think a healthy Aaron Rodgers is at least an 8-win season. Then you kind of build on top of it from there. I think the schedule this year does shape up to be about the same as last year. I didn't think last year, I know statistically we had what was supposed to be the easiest season, but the way that the games laid out and the times that we played those teams really was more of a challenge than it appeared on paper. I think if we can go 12-4, 11-5, that's a more or less a reasonable, realistic expectation for Green Bay this year.
Yeah, I've got you at 13-3, and you know, there are a couple of games that I definitely think I've got you as W's that could go either way. Seattle would be one of them, at Minnesota, even though I do have you splitting with Minnesota, that could go either way. Obviously, I mentioned that you're going to split with the Bears.
I heard you say that.
Well, listen, I always look at division games differently than a lot of other people. I usually always start with you're going to split against your division no matter what. Now, there are certain instances where I do believe that you can sweep. In this particular instance, you know, I do think that the history between the Bears and the Vikings show that a split is more likely than a sweep of Chicago.
I guess I would disagree. I think McCarthy's got a really, really strong record against the division. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like we'd won like something like 8 of the last 9 or something, 8 of the last 10 against Chicago. So I think we'll probably sweep. And if you're saying we're going to lose 3 games, I'm guessing one of those 3 is not to Chicago.
No, 1 is to Chicago. So yeah, I do have you splitting with Chicago.
Yeah,
so
I heard you say that. I just think you're wrong.
Fair enough. I do think the Panthers game could go either way. The Pittsburgh game could go either way. I've got you winning both those. Tampa Bay game could go either way. And I've got you winning that one. So there's some plus or minus obviously involved.
I appreciate your optimism.
Joe, you mentioned earlier you saw like an 8-8, 9-7 season, and I've got you nailed at 9-7.
Yeah, I think, the season's really going to come down to whether or not the team can stay healthy. Big question mark is going to be who's going to fill in for Captain Munnerlyn and the nickel, and whether or not the offensive line is going to improve enough to get some sort of semblance of a running game. You know, we've got a pretty tough schedule ahead of us. If the coaching staff in the front office can keep that dark cloud that is Teddy Bridgewater from disrupting the play of Sam Bradford, and the offensive line can keep him upright, I think that we have the potential to be an 11-win team. That being said, you know, we are the thinnest team as far as depth goes, probably in the NFC North, and in the way of being able to miss any one of our quality starters. And if Bradford goes down and Teddy's not ready to play, we have Case Keenum, and then the season goes pear shaped, and we end up with a top 10 pick.
Tom, I had mentioned before we went to our Lions guest that I had you at 3-13. I've got the Lions at 6-10. I definitely have the Lions taking a step back. And since neither of the three of you got a chance to speak with our guest, so I'll give you an opportunity to jump in on the Lions right here.
Well, their problem, you know, I don't think it's really a big problem in Green Bay, but the Lions and the Vikings both have the same problem, and that's terrible offensive line play. And I think that maybe they did enough to improve their line, but we're going to have to wait and see. Their big problem, if they want to take the next step up instead of a step back, I'll tell you what they're going to have to do. Last year, their last three games, Giants, Cowboys, Packers, and then their playoff game against Seattle, all losses. Defense allowed 378 yards and 29 points per game in those losses. They had zero interceptions. They had zero fumble recoveries. The Vikings and the Lions both do the same thing. They do okay against teams that they should beat, but they run up against good teams where they can actually show that they've taken a step up, and they lose. And they're going to have to show me that things are different this year in order for me to predict that they'll be better. In terms of how I go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to let Joe jump in on the Lions here, and especially since you've compared them so closely to his team.
That's fine.
Yeah, the Lions, they do a lot of the same things that the Vikings do, but I think that the difference between the Lions of 2015 and the Lions of 2016 is that they got extremely lucky in close games. I think that their first seven wins of 2016 were when they were trailing in the fourth quarter. I think that definitely the Lions are going to take a step back. But as far as the way that the team operates, I don't know that I would necessarily call them similar. The Vikings are predicated on defense, and the Lions are about slinging the ball all over the field, you know, 50 throws a game.
Yeah, Brian, as I was told by some of our super fans before we started the division previews, when we played Better, Worse, Same, if you missed that show, you should be subscribed. Go check out our archive on iTunes or Stitcher or elsewhere. They just simply said Jim Bob Cooter.
Yeah, he really did turn things around for him. You can say what you want about his name, but I think he's a pretty good coach. I think the comparisons that both these guys have made have been very apt. I think the one piece that I will throw in, and maybe it's just my Packers fandom, both those teams, tremendous choke artists.
Mm. Ouch.
I don't know. I can't argue with it. I just said they can't win a big game. And against a good team, I wouldn't have called it a choke. I would have called it just that they're not good enough to beat them. But maybe they do choke. I don't know.
All right. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That is the NFC North preview. If you disagree with us, and I'm sure you do, send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com, and you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. We respond to tweets as well. And on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, where you can interact with us. All of our podcasts are listed on our Facebook page. Check out our website if you'd like, nextfanup.wordpress.com, where we have a few different articles. I think the latest one is still Greg's review of Manchester by the Sea. That was a payment for his Steelers losing to the New England Patriots. So it's an apropos. And as I mentioned before, be a subscriber so you don't miss any of our shows or any of our division previews. We're deep into the division previews at this point. So if you missed any, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher, leave us a review like Fired Up 404 did on Stitcher, writing, "Fantastic show. If you remember the cool camaraderie and competition amongst the superfans in the original pro football podcast Pod Vader helped produce, that is it on stair. No, that would not be league approved. Just know that all that fun plus a whole lot more is in this podcast. Subscribe and come represent your team. Thanks, Fired Up 404. That was a great review. I appreciate it. And you're right. That would not be league approved. So anyway, join the fun, subscribe, share the show with your friends. And with that note, here comes our backup quarterback, Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.